the WMRA Daily for WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. A new director takes the helm of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County's Joint Emergency Communications Center. In the General Assembly, bills advance that would ban assault-style weapons, outlaw the herbicide paraquat, and change Virginia's participation in the Electoral College. And we tour two businesses in the Valley that take very different approaches to processing reusables. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, February 10th. A new director is taking the helm of the Harrisonburg-Rockingham Emergency Communications Center. The Emergency Services veteran steps into a role with deep ties to the two jurisdictions that clashed over the center's operations last year. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
The city announced last week that Paul Helmuth, currently the administrative officer and deputy emergency coordinator with the Harrisonburg Fire Department, will assume the 911 call center directorship in March. Helmuth's career started in the Valley as a teenaged radio communicator for search and rescue events.
I have grown up in emergency services in this community. I know all of the stakeholders that ECC works with, including the city and the county, and have a good working relationship for the last 35 years with those stakeholders.
Helmuth served in several places around the country as a helicopter dispatcher and flight paramedic. He was working in D.C. during 9/11 and the anthrax and beltway sniper attacks, and later led Harrisonburg's COVID pandemic response. He spent 4 years with the Rockingham County Department of Fire and Rescue and 16 with the City Fire Department. Helmuth is also an inaugural member of the Virginia Communications Cache, a network of 5 teams across the state with caches of radio equipment that can be deployed for planned or emergency events. He takes on the ECC role after conflicts between the city and county led to the resignation of the former director.
Part of what I feel my responsibility is as the new director is, one, working with the staff to make sure that their needs are met and that they are in an environment where they can thrive and do well and grow within the position and help the organization to grow.
He said that includes addressing understaffing and training needs. In the city's press release, both the Harrisonburg City Manager and Rockingham County Administrator praised his appointment. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
We've posted links to more information at WMRA.org and on our app. On Monday morning around 11:15, Virginia State Police troopers attempted to stop a suspect vehicle along Interstate 81 northbound at the 241-mile marker. The vehicle refused to stop and police pursued. The chase continued northbound until mile 244 in Harrisonburg, where the suspect vehicle attempted to split traffic and struck a tractor trailer and a pickup truck. The vehicle then overturned and came to rest in the median. The suspect driver was treated and taken into custody. The crash caused major delays, closing all lanes in both directions on I-81 as the afternoon began. The incident remains under investigation. A new law allows pregnant Virginians to enroll in the state's insurance marketplace year-round. The law, which went into effect January 31st, makes pregnancy a, quote, qualifying life event, similar to losing a job or getting married. It allows Virginians to enroll for insurance to access prenatal care, which has been associated with better outcomes for the parent and child. Virginians are on track to vote on new proposed congressional maps in April. Meanwhile, a bill creating the new map was debated in the House of Delegates Monday, Virginia Public Radio's Brad Kuttner reports.
The new Virginia maps, proposed by leading Democrats in both chambers, leans into a partisan gerrymander. The new districts, drawn to favor 10 of the Commonwealth seats for Democrats and one for a Republican, sprawl across the state at times, with the 7th district shaped like a lobster in order to maximize Democratic voters. And on the House floor Monday, Republican delegate Terry Kilgore detailed just how elongated some of the districts would be.
From Danville, all the counties bordering North Carolina down through here, you get to be represented by one of the congressmen from Richmond. And Campbell, Appomattox, Prince Edward, you all get to be represented by the other congressman from Richmond.
But Democratic delegate Sia Price said the effort was designed to counter actions by President Trump.
We are here today on this amendment because President Trump called on red states to find him more seats. The same president that called on an election official in Georgia to find him more votes.
A final vote on the bill happens Tuesday. It's expected to pass along party lines before heading to the Senate.
The sale of assault-style firearms may soon be banned in Virginia. The House of Delegates and Senate have both approved the idea. Also with Virginia Public Radio, Michael Pope reports.
Gun violence has become endemic in recent years, and assault-style weapons are often in the headlines when they're used in mass shootings. According to the advocacy group Everytown for Gun Safety, the use of an assault weapon in a mass shooting results in twice as many people killed and 23 times as many people wounded. Here's Senator Barbara Favola, a Democrat from Arlington.
Virginians, I believe, want to feel safe. They want to be able to go about their daily business. They want to be able to go to grocery stores, send their children to school, go to a movie theater without the fear of somebody having a weapon of mass destruction and being caught up in a massive shootout.
Are assault-style weapons really weapons of mass destruction? Here's Senator Mark Obenchain, a Republican from Rockingham County.
It is laughable to suggest that these are weapons of mass destruction. Atom bombs are weapons of mass destruction. Chemical weapons are weapons of mass destruction. These are rifles. They are rifles that some people think look scary. And as a consequence, we're out to develop window dressing to make it feel like, make it look like, to make people think that we are doing something good.
Last week, the House passed an assault weapons ban. Now the Senate has passed similar legislation. That means it'll likely be heading to the governor's desk soon.
Virginia could become the first state to ban paraquat, a commonly used herbicide that's highly toxic. Patrick Larson with VPM News has the details.
Chesapeake Democratic Delegate Nadarius Clark says the science is increasingly clear. Long-term paraquat exposure is associated with Parkinson's disease. He said alternative herbicides exist and are just as effective.
We can protect farmers, workers, and rural families while supporting a strong competitive agricultural sector.
Jake Tabor with the Virginia Farm Bureau said the science on paraquat's connections to Parkinson's is unclear and that phasing the chemical out would impact farmers.
It would take two or three other products potentially to replace this, which, you know, in the broad scheme of things is increasing our pesticide use.
Two Democrats joined Republicans in opposing the measure, but it still passed out of subcommittee. It has to go to a full committee before heading to the House of Delegates.
Patrick Larson reporting. How should Virginia participate in the Electoral College? That's the question as legislators are considering joining other states to reduce its influence. Michael has the details.
The National Popular Vote Compact is an agreement between states that they'll cast their electoral votes for the winner of the nationwide popular vote in a presidential election. If Virginia enters the compact, all 13 of its electoral votes would go to the winner of the national popular vote. That's regardless of the outcome in the Commonwealth. Senator Chris Head is a Republican from Botetourt County who says the Electoral College was created for an important reason.
So that you don't have what was referred to then as the tyranny of the majority. Every state would be able to have the people of that state, sovereign states, would be represented appropriately.
Senate Majority Leader Scott Surville says the Electoral College is an idea whose time has passed.
The Electoral College is not something we all should be lauding and patting ourselves on the back and saying what a wonderful thing it is. It has arrogant, aristocratic, and racist origins. And its consequences continue to play itself out today. And this is an attempt to try to mitigate the effects of that, because amending the Constitution in this regard is probably pretty much impossible.
Senators approved the bill for Virginia to enter the National Popular Vote Compact on a party line vote this week. Now it's headed to the House of Delegates. Reporting from the Capitol in Richmond, I'm Michael Pope.
Republicans in Congress created a new tax credit that would benefit private schools. That was part of last year's massive budget bill. But a Democrat in the House of Delegates wants to limit those funds. Brad has that story.
The Education Freedom Tax Credit Program offers a dollar-for-dollar tax credit of up to $1,700 for those who donate to certain schools approved by a state's governor. One of former Governor Glenn Youngkin's last actions was to enter Virginia into the program and provide a list of institutions which could benefit. It's basically a national voucher program, one that most Republican-led states have entered, while most Democratic-led states have waited for more rules from the federal government before deciding. But Fairfax Democratic delegate Dan Helmer wants to limit who could receive these funds via a new bill that would require recipients of the funds to take SOL tests, among other Department of Education requirements, and follow civil rights laws.
This is a bill that ensures public dollars from the federal government, as administered by Virginia, are never used to discriminate against Virginians.
But Cumberland Republican delegate Tom Garrett said he was worried the law would violate the U.S. Constitution by requiring private religious schools to teach subjects that go against their faith.
We can't do this. If we do this, it will be struck down.
Michael J. Petrelli is the president of the right-leaning education think tank, the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. He said the program wasn't well designed, but it could be a new source for funding for private schools. He thinks Virginia's new governor, Abigail Spanberger, should keep the state in.
As a show of good faith, and to allow, for example, low-income kids in Richmond to go to Catholic schools that have a long history of serving poor and working class kids well, I think that is something that she very much might want to do.
The bill now heads to the Money Committee, where its $3 million price tag could decide its fate. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Many of us recycle items such as used soup cans, milk jugs, old medicine bottles. But what actually gets recycled or reused? WMRA's Aisha Pirga explores two places in the Shenandoah Valley with different approaches to processing reusables.
This is where the product gets dumped in, so this is the inbound bunk.
Ross Hewitt is the owner of RCS Waste and Recycling in Winchester. They handle the area's commingled and commercial recycling, 75 tons of recyclable items every day. Commingled refers to single-stream recycling, in which materials are placed in containers without being sorted first.
So this plant was built to handle residential recycling. So like in your planned communities or towns, when that recycling gets picked up and it's all mixed together, it gets brought here and then dumped in these bunks.
Hewitt shows me a mixed bottle bunk, which includes things such as soup cans and milk jugs. There is also a bunk or bin where everything is mixed together, such as cardboard and aluminum. These items will go through the conveyors and get separated. Hewitt says it takes roughly 15 people to run the plant. Each person has their own category that they sort, such as milk jugs. At the quality control line, items that can't be recycled get picked out. These may include
garden hoses, engine blocks, stuff never dead animals, I mean just crazy stuff.
Whatever is left at the end of the conveyor line after the picking is done is considered trash and will go into a trash compactor. Hewitt says around 10% of the mixed recyclables they receive is unrecoverable.
Recycling, they call it. People hoping to recycle the can.
As for items that do get recycled, some may end up in unexpected places. The PET water bottles here, for example, will end up in Alabama to produce LVT flooring. There are also a number two plastics, such as milk jugs, that are used to make corrugated pipes. They also recycle items such as concrete and brick. Hewitt says magnet separators pull steel and aluminum off of the conveyor. Much of it ends up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, or Ohio, and gets melted down for reuse. Hewitt says the biggest challenge in selling recycled materials to manufacturers is that a lot of times their products are competing with cheaper, new materials such as resin and plastic.
So you have some municipalities, states, stuff like that, that mandate a certain percentage. So it's kind of like these companies are buying it because they're mandated.
But what about items that can be repurposed without being processed in a facility, simply reused? Valley Creative Reuse in Harrisonburg also recycles materials, in a way. It's not a conventional arts and crafts store, but one where people can donate as well as purchase any supplies that they need. They also host classes and workshops. Morgan Krabel-Gross founded Valley Creative Reuse in 2023, inspired by the model she saw in Pittsburgh.
And it was during the time that I was there that I discovered one room where it was just floor to ceiling art and craft supplies. Oh. And my brain lit up. So it was after learning about the model, the creative reuse model in Pittsburgh, that that seed was first planted.
Yeah. Girl says they've had a really strong community response from the beginning.
Early on, we spent a lot of time just having community conversations, trying to figure out if this was something that people were even interested in. Mm-hmm. And we kept getting yes, yes, yes.
She says they have what is called a fill-a-bag pricing system, and they want the items to be affordable.
We have four brown bag sizes. Each of them are priced. And for the most part, things just go right into whatever bag size you choose. We call it the Tetris effect, where people at the end are trying to decide how much they can pack into their bag.
They also have some items with a brown handwritten price tag on them, as well as beads and jewelry, which people can fill into bottles.
These are old medicine bottles, exactly. So everything that we can reuse and repurpose around here, we do. We try to avoid having to purchase anything new as best we can.
Girl says they're constantly sorting through donations that they receive and describes the situation in the store as organized chaos.
So over in this area, we have paper crafting, like pom-poms and popsicle sticks, old CDs and other types of things for repurposing. We've got some office supplies and stencils.
Also glitter, googly eyes, envelopes, and even old calendars. Some of the donations they have received in the past stand out.
Our very first donation was these brightly colored spools of wire that was used by a company that was making durable medical device equipment. So it's like wires that would go into a pacemaker, for example.
Another unusual donation, parts from an old piano.
That's exactly the type of thing that, you know, we can't take everybody's broken down pianos, but they had it nicely organized and broken down into kind of usable pieces. So we took them.
She says around half of these piano parts are already gone. As the saying goes, one person's trash can be another's treasure. For WMRA News, I'm Aisha Pirge.
You can find photos and links to more information at WMRA.org and on our app. Finally today, environmental and recreational fishing groups are again pushing state lawmakers to halt industrial menhaden fishing in the Chesapeake Bay. WHRO's Catherine Hafner has the latest.
Menhaden are small fish with a big role in the ecosystem, and advocates worry they're disappearing. The groups have long wanted research to figure out what's happening with menhaden in the bay, but lawmakers kept kicking it down the road. Alan Wingfield with the Richmond Audubon Society says they don't want to wait any longer.
The story's always the same. We don't have the science to prove anything, but then you go try to get the science. Oh, we're not going to do that either. So it feels like a giant game of Lucy and the football.
This year, a proposed bill would ban the industry in the bay until new research shows it's not harmful. Ocean harvesters could still fish in the ocean, where it usually gets about 2/3 of its harvest. The company says it's unworkable to prove a negative and threatens hundreds of jobs in Reedville.
Catherine Hafner reporting. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy your Tuesday.